or denied you their help, or deserted their duty of waging jihad alongside you, or those who belittled your merits, contested your right, or regarded as your equals such persons over whom Allah had given you a greater right than they had over themselves. May Allah's blessings, His mercy, His bounties, and His greetings and salutations be upon you and the immaculate Imams of your descent. Indeed, He is the All-Praiseworthy and All-Glorious. But what is more amazing and more atrocious after the denial of your right is the wrongful dispossession of the orchard of Fadak from Zahra, the truthful and the pure one, the noblest of the world's women, and the rejection of your testimony and that of your illustrious sons and the progeny of the Mustafa, may Allah's blessings be upon you, while Allah, the Most High, had elevated your rank over the entire Ummah and exalted your station, and He had made manifest your excellence and honored you above all the world's denizens. Keeping away all impurity from you and purifying you with utmost purification. Allah the Almighty and Glorious has said, "Indeed, man has been created covetous. He is anxious when an ill befalls him, and grudging when good comes his way. All are such except the prayerful." Thus Allah the Most High made His Prophet an exception to that, as well as you, O Chief of the Legatees, and excluded all other people. So how misguided were those who wronged you with respect to your right and then, for the sake of deception, assigned you the share of the kinsmen while denying it to its rightful claimants. So when temporal authority came into your hands, you let the situation remain as it was before in regard to your rights and those of the Prophet's family, disregarding them for the sake of your reward with Allah. So your ordeal with respect to these two things was like the ordeal of the prophets, may peace be upon them, in their loneliness and absence of helpers. Your conduct in sleeping on the prophet's bed was like that of Ishmael, peace upon him, when you assented and obeyed, as he did, patiently and seeking God's pleasure, when Abraham said to him, "My son, I see in a dream that I am sacrificing you. See what you think." He said, "Father, do whatever you have been commanded. If Allah wishes, you will find me to be patient." And so were you when the Prophet, may Allah bless him and his family, bade you to sleep in his bed, and in this manner you shielded him from harm by risking your own life. You were quick to comply, having obediently prepared yourself mentally to be killed, whereupon Allah, the Most High, appreciated your obedience and expressed the gracefulness of your action in His words, "May His name be glorified." And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah. Yet again, your ordeal during the Battle of Siffin, when the scriptures were raised on spears as a deceptive stratagem whereupon doubts arose in the minds and the truth was set aside and conjecture was followed, similar to the ordeal of Aaron when he was appointed by Moses to lead his people, whereupon they forsook him while he kept calling them, saying, "O my people, you are only being tested by it. Indeed, your Lord is the All-Beneficent, so follow me and obey my command." They had said, "We will keep on clinging to it until Moses returns to us." Such was your case when the scriptures were raised on spear points and you were saying, O my people, you are being misled and deceived by this means. But they disobeyed you and demanded the appointment of arbiters, whereat you declined their demand and deploring their conduct before Allah, and let them alone. So when the truth was revealed and their wrong stand was discredited, and they admitted their mistake and oversight of the goal. But then they fell into disagreement and blamed on you the folly of arbitration, which you had opposed and they had desired and which you had warned them against, while they considered it legitimate, and held you responsible for the sin that they had committed, although you were on the path of insight and guidance and they were in error and blindness. Yet they persisted in their hypocrisy and perversity until Allah made them taste the evil consequences of their conduct. Those who opposed you became wretched and perished, and God slew them with your sword. He revived through your proofs those who were felicitous and they were rightly guided. May Allah's blessings be upon you at every beginning and end of your days and during all your movements and pauses. No eulogizer can encompass your merits and no detractor can obscure your excellences. You are the best of the creatures with regard to worship, the most dedicated in piety, and the most zealous in defending the faith. With your efforts you maintained the laws of Allah, and with your sword subdued the armies of the renegades. With your hands you extinguished the flames of war, and with your discourses removed the veils of doubt, separated the adulterating falsehoods from the pure truth without being deterred by the blame of any blamer in any matter pertaining to Allah. The commendations of Allah, the Most High, suffices you to do without the praise of any admirer and compliments of any praiser. And Allah, the Most High, has said, Among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait and they have not changed in the least. Having seen that you had to fight the perfidious, the perverse, and the renegades, and that the prophecy of the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his household, had come true in what he had told you, and being content that you had fulfilled your pledge to him, you would say, Is it not the time yet for this beard of mine to be dyed in the blood of this head of mine? Or when will the most wretched man from among these people rise up? You were convinced that you possessed a manifest proof from your Lord and full insight of your own affair, and that you will meet Allah rejoicing in the bargain you had made with him, and that is the great success. O Allah, let your anathema, accompanied with all your curses, be on those who slew your prophets and the legacies of your prophets, and make them enter the flames of your fire. Let your curse be on those who usurp the rights of your wali, refused to acknowledge his covenant, and opposed him after acknowledging and being certain of his authority on the day when you perfected the religion for them. O Allah, let your curse be on those who killed the commander of the faithful, and those who wronged him, and their followers and supporters. O Allah, bring down your terrible curse on those who wronged Hussein, and those who slew him, as well as those who followed and helped his enemies, those who approved of his murder, and those who forsook him. O Allah, let your curse be on the one first to wrong the family of Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, those who denied them their rights. O Allah, single out for your curse until the day of resurrection the first one who wronged the family of Muhammad and usurped their rights as well as those who followed his policies. O Allah, bless Muhammad, seal of the prophets, and Ali, chief of the legatees, and his immaculate progeny, and appoint me to be amongst their adherents, among those who obtain victory and security through their wilaya, and who will have no fear, nor will they ever grieve. Dear listeners, what you heard was the fourth and last part of our special program of the past 4 days and a special ziyara of the blessed day of Qadir for the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم to another program of the Youth Station at IRIB English Radio.
Waalaikum assalam, brother.
Oh, you're here.
Yes, I'm here as well.
Right, so in the studio we've got Sister Asma here.
Now welcome. I know that I have the talent of being invisible.
Yeah, well, that's a superpower that
yes.
Many people wish. Have you ever thought of leaving where you were born or where you grew up and going somewhere else?
No.
All right. Have you seen people who've done that?
Of course.
And have you seen people who've done that and then regretted that they've done it and returned to the place that they were originally from?
Yes, of course. Since we are human beings, we see many incidents upon different issues.
And people do make mistakes since they're humans. Why do they
migrate?
Leave? Yeah, why do they do that?
Well,
in the first
I guess,
place?
First of all, we have to differentiate. Since I know you're very much interested in etymology of words, I would like to ask you a question.
Right. No, I am certain that I do not know the answer. So you can just go on and answer yourself.
So there's a difference between actually migration
and immigration.
Immigration.
Right, what is it?
Immigration is typically something that is going to happen like you leave your country forever.
Right.
And migration is sort of doing that for a job or maybe after you afford enough of money or, I don't know, study.
Right, whatever
education.
Purpose you had, you fulfilled it and you came back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fair
yeah.
enough.
So there's a difference, a ton of difference between these words, and we just wanted to differentiate between them at the very beginning of our discussion. So why do people go for migration?
Yeah, that was my question, but that was a smart move that you just threw it right back at me.
It's a circle, you know.
Yeah. Be it immigration or migration, right? One has to have certain requirements that he or she may not see being fulfilled
mm-hmm.
in the place they are.
Yeah.
It's another debate that whether it's got anything to do with reality, whether that requirement was possible to be fulfilled in that place that they were in the first place, right?
Yeah, of course.
But we're talking about their perspective,
mm-hmm.
the way they see it, right? Well, they see something is missing.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that there's something incomplete.
Yeah.
That may be around their society or that may be because of the limitations that they feel around themselves, right?
Yeah. Or sometimes it happens that people do travel beyond the borders of their country for education.
Yeah. Why though?
Why? In order to improve themselves.
Right. But why not the place that they were in the first place? Why would they choose to leave that place, right? Not go for that specific
because
thing, whatever
they,
it was.
Just as you said, there is an illusion, perhaps, in their brain.
Right.
That
that's as we said, that's completely different whether it's true or not, right?
Uh-huh,
that's completely different. But what they see is something has to be completed.
Uh-huh.
There is something that's incomplete in their minds,
so
right?
So you say that the main reason to go for migration or emigration, whatever, is to find some more of facilities?
Facilities might be one of the things that they see incomplete, right? They see that this place, the time around, lacks something, right? Let's go from a very small thing, spectrum, which is a guy... He is a family, right? And he's a rebel, for example. He's a rebellious young lad, right? And he sees that in this city, like, you know, people who just change their cities, not even just countries, right? City, from city to city, right?
Yes.
That youth might see that in this city, everyone knows me, right? And my mom and dad, I'm just a phone call away. They know where I am, right? I can't do... whatever I want to my heart's will, right?
Yes,
want that liberty. I want that freedom. I want to be separate. I want to be independent, right?
Yeah.
So that's a type of escapism, right? This lad leaves a city, goes to another city, leaves the country, goes to another country because he wants that liberty, right? He wants no chains around him. He wants to be free, right, in that sense. So he leaves that country. So he leaves that country or the city, whatever.
Yeah.
In this example, this young man or young woman felt their lack of freedom, right? In this certain example, right? Another young person or a student might leave their city, their country, go to another country because they think that the field, the profession that this person has chosen has not been fully discovered in the country that they're in.
That is very true,
Right?
Yeah,
so
that's very true.
Yeah. So they see that the education standards or level, or even if the education is right on the dot, but after I've done my education, I don't get enough jobs over here. I get underpaid, for example, right? So they see a certain lacking, a certain sense of incomplete. I'm going to take a break from talking. Are you tired?
No, of course
not. Oh, well, I am tired.
Because we're having some very interesting stuff. We discussed on some very good things.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Shall we carry on?
No. So you mentioned some very important factors for migration. One of them was freedom, searching for freedom. The other one was to complete something that you feel is incomplete.
Right. Even freedom, like in my opinion, in my opinion, even freedom itself, all of it is like sub-topics or sub-branches
division.
Or offshoots of what missing something.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I accept that. Well, let's make it more real and come back to the real world.
Wow, so I wasn't being real.
No. I mean, we were talking about the reasons as if they were something metaphysical and talking beyond the curtains. We were just talking about the reasons behind those migrations that happen in the real world.
That's going to be a very, very long...
So, you see, we see many people... that would love to leave Eastern countries in order to go to West. And by West, we specifically mean United States of America.
Right.
So many people had this illusion one day at a time in history that there is a dreamland, which is America, and when they go there, they would fulfill all their dreams and everything is going to be so pitchy. And out of nowhere, they're going to turn affluent, wealthy, rich, or they would have so much of, I don't know, tools for their lives.
The standard American dream.
American dreams. Now, we see that people who lived in that time turned into a lost generation because there actually was not such a thing called as American dream. And right now...
Yeah, people actually needed to wake up from the American dream.
We came to this point that people of America are searching to have some other places to go for.
Right. Are all of the
people... Actually, not all of them.
Right.
We're not used to hear this, you know? People from West trying to find a new country to go to.
It does happen all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Within the West, for example, you'd see people from Britain leave Britain, go Canada, settle up over there. And mm-hmm. you'd see people from different places that move from their certain country, from their country to another country.
Yeah. But, you know, nowadays, the reasons have changed.
Reasons have changed?
Yeah.
Right. What were the reasons before and what do you think are the reasons
now? You know,
now,
even if they have enough of facilities around them, they would search for another country to go for. For example, the people of America right now are not suffering from these sort of issues, you know. They have wealth and perhaps they have prosperity, but what they're searching for is perhaps peace.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, all what we see in the news,
like, there is
this
a lot of
harshness.
Poverty in America.
Yeah.
There is a lot of poverty in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not talk about, we don't mean to judge, but let's not talk about the people low who are under the a line of poverty, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about people, as you mentioned, wealthy people, rich people,
they seem
right?
not to have any problem in their life.
Right. As an outsider, I'd see them and yeah. I'd be like, you don't have a problem. You've got mm-hmm. mansions, you've got villas, you've got cars, you've got a family, you've got everything, you've got money, you've got yeah. influence, right? All these things you've got in your pocket. Why would you want to leave that place, right?
Yes.
Those people, yeah, that's a big question mark. Why would they want to leave mm-hmm. that place or, you know, leave that comfort zone that they've made for themselves? They spent their entire life to construct that comfort zone that
yeah.
they were in. Now that they have it, why do they choose to break free of that zone that they've developed for themselves?
Exactly. You know, I've been reading an article in Forbes.com and it's talked actually a bit about the reasons behind that. And it says that the reasons for that range from different things, be it political, racial, or as the Supreme Court has passed some laws regarding abortion, or, you know, safety issues, I mean, peace. These are the things that are very common in there right now.
Mm-hmm.
As the reasons for people to migrate from there and find a plan B sort of a country or city to go
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned abortions because since the court has mm-hmm. ordered abortions to be illegal in certain states in the United States, and the president cannot overrule or overlook or revoke the law that has been made by mm-hmm. the court, right?
Yeah.
But here he is. What does he say? He says, right, people who want an abortion done and it's illegal in their state, they can just go to another state, get
yeah.
their abortion done, and return to the state they were originally in.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
It's not like always migration would happen from a bad place to a good place. Sometimes people would do migration from a good place into a better place or into a moderate country even.
Right. But let's go back to the first thing that we discussed, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that good country, in that wealthy country, in that so-called stable
yeah.
country, right?
Mm-hmm.
That person who is deciding to move from that place, go to another place, is certainly sensing an incomplete feeling around himself, right?
He
feels something's lacking
yeah.
around him, which is why he has to leave.
Well, just to give the gist of what we were talking about to our dear audience, I would say that we're talking about migration or emigration, whatever,
just moving around. We're talking about
moving around, leaving your country into another place. Well, we said that there are different causes for that, different factors. And the main idea upon that, as the brother mentioned, is just the fact that you feel something is missing around you and you need to complete it to find it somewhere else.
Your idea of perfection is something that you go after.
That's very interesting. Yeah, perfection is the thing that would lead you into migration and leaving your recent place into a different one.
You might define completion in a certain way and another person might define it another way.
Yeah.
Right. But they're all after what? Completion.
That is very true. Yeah. It's a general fact.
Yeah.
So thank you, dear listeners, for staying around. This was all the time that we had for today's discussion. Thank you for choosing us. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
If you did not choose us, you better choose us.
Yes, there's no other way for you. And I will leave you to the never-slipping eyes of God.
I have what I have. My love is strong. Because of you, in weakness I am braver. My defender and my savior. My giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, among the mistakes of the parents. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In today's lesson, we'll talk about the mistakes of the parents, or the mistakes that the parents do upon their children that don't lead to good results. Mostly, it's expected of a parent to be more understanding in the way he or she is dealing with the child. Because the parent has lived more years than the child has. The parent is older than the child. He's lived more years in the world than the child has. So sometimes, as much as the parents are trying hard to make it good, they're trying hard to bring up the children in a good manner, you find out there are a few mistakes that this particular guide or parent is doing in his life that make it difficult for the child to grow to be a good child, to be a better child. Now, one of the mistakes that the parents do during their parenthood is that some of them deal with their children as if they are small kids, you know, by imposing their wills on them. This may cause unhappiness and discomfort in the young boy or the girl. So this particular young boy, this particular girl that is growing up, expects to be respected, being that he or she is coming out of the children's world into the world of the adults. You know, up till today, there are some parents who are fond of cautioning their children, even when they grow up. For example, to be careful of cars on the road when they want to cross the road or when they want to go out to their workplaces or other places. Such advices are good advices for children. Such advices are good advices for children, but they are not good for the grown-up who knows how to take care of themselves, you know? You can advise the kid to do things according to the age that they are into. A child or a kid who is 20 years of age should not be told, should not be advised as the kid who is 2 years old. So as parents, it's expected from us to be advising our kids. But how are we supposed to be advising them? We should advise them according to their age. A two-year child should be advised as a 2 years kid. And a 20 years old should be advised as a 20 years old child and not the other ways, because it will lead to bad results.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is A to Z. We are talking about the mistakes, or among the mistakes of the parents, or the mistakes that the parents do in their day-to-day livelihoods. So you see, a parent, as much as they're trying hard to make it good to their kids, they are usually making so many mistakes that lead to bad results. So, among the mistakes that parents do during their parenthood is to enforce on our children a certain work or profession that we like, of which in the end, you find out that the child doesn't like that particular profession. The child doesn't feel to be like a teacher, but you as a parent, you're forcing the child to be a teacher in their life. This is because a young boy or the young kid, the young girl who is growing up is an independent personality. You might like seeing your child to be a teacher in life. It might make you feel good, feel happy to see that your child has attained a certain responsibility, a certain career in their life. It will make you happy, of course, but you realize that the kid or the young girl, the young boy who is growing up, doesn't feel like doing that particular career, doesn't feel to be that particular personality that you want them to be. He's an independent personality. He wants to be different. He wants to be what he feels, because he's growing up as a different human being than you are. So you cannot enforce a certain career, a certain job, a certain thing that you think is good. You cannot enforce it on your kid. This is a big mistake that could lead in the failure of life of that young boy when he or she grows up in life. We should be careful about this. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening. Fi amanillah. Bye.
In the limelight.
If the conflict in Yemen is to end, the U.S. must engage in enhanced diplomacy and cut off the flow of weapons and other military support to the Saudi coalition. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Farah Hassan, a Foreign Policy in Focus contributor, in an article published under the heading and the war in Yemen. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The United Nations has called the Saudi Arabia-led U.S.-backed war in Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Yet, even that designation hardly captures the full extent of misery endured by its people over 7 years of violence and unrelenting war. It is also a crisis that the United States has not only enabled, but has been instrumental in fueling through military aid to the Saudi coalition. A bipartisan resolution now before Congress offers an opportunity to achieve a permanent ceasefire in Yemen and provide sorely needed oversight of unauthorized U.S. military involvement there. If the conflict in Yemen is to end, the U.S. must engage in enhanced diplomacy and cut off the flow of weapons and other military support to the Saudi coalition. Congress must also address the constitutional issues raised by U.S. involvement in Yemen. If passed, House Joint Resolution HJR 87, introduced on May 31st, would accomplish these goals by invoking the 1973 War Powers Resolution. The resolution, sponsored by Representative Peter DeFazio and over 100 members of Congress, has the support of organizations from across the political spectrum. Its introduction comes in the midst of a fragile, temporary truce between the Saudi-led forces and other groups. Specifically, the resolution would end U.S. intelligence sharing and logistical support for offensive Saudi-led coalition strikes, including the maintenance and repair of coalition aircraft engaged in bombings. It would also prohibit U.S. personnel from assisting Saudi-led coalition forces engaged in hostilities unless they have prior congressional authorization. Despite the absence of congressional approval, the U.S. regime has continuously backed the Saudi coalition against the people of Yemen since 2015 by providing nearly $60 billion of military support and weapons to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. President Biden's previous pledge to withdraw U.S. support from offensive operations in Yemen has so far proven empty. His administration still sells arms to Riyadh and provides critical U.S. maintenance to Saudi warplanes conducting deadly airstrikes in Yemen, thus making this already unclear distinction of offensive versus defensive weapons essentially meaningless. All told, the military coalition led by Saudi Arabia and UAE has conducted over 25,000 air raids since 2015, killing nearly 9,000 civilians, according to data compiled by the Yemen Data Project. Serious human rights abuses have also been documented, including likely war crimes from these airstrikes that have targeted civilians in their homes, markets, and hospitals. Everyone is frightened. Children are traumatized. We tell them, don't worry, it's all fine, but they wake up to the sound of massive explosions just like we do, said Abdul Wasi Muhammad, a Yemen-based air worker. Last month, the Washington Post published an investigation detailing U.S. culpability in Yemen, including evidence of U.S. manufactured weapons used to carry out such attacks. And yet, the U.S. government has somehow failed to determine the extent to which the U.S. military support has contributed to civilian harm in Yemen. The U.S. Government Accountability Office found in its new report. Saudi Arabia's sea, land and air blockade of Yemen has further worsened the humanitarian crisis there by depriving the country of critical food, fuel and medicine, which has contributed to the death of over 100,000 Yemeni people. Over 17 million Yemenis today live on the brink of starvation. The conflict in Eastern Europe has exacerbated the famine, since approximately 30% of Yemen's wheat imports come from Ukraine. With food prices soaring, the World Food Programme warns that acute hunger in Yemen is expected to increase fivefold by the end of the year. Alongside this urgent need to protect Yemeni civilians, it is also long past time for Congress to reclaim its authority to declare war under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. Congress passed the War Powers Resolution in 1973 after revelations of President Nixon's secret bombing campaign in Cambodia during the Vietnam War. It was intended to limit the President's ability to initiate or escalate military actions abroad without congressional consent, which has clearly not happened in Yemen. Ultimately, it is within the power of the U.S. to end this war in Yemen through diplomacy and by cutting off U.S. arms and military support. Doing so would help bring all sides to the negotiating table and end the prolonged agony of Yemenis. Former President Donald Trump vetoed a previous bipartisan attempt by Congress to do so, but with President Biden's backing, Congress now has a chance to make it a reality. Biden recently paid a visit to Saudi Arabia to meet with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, with an eye towards pushing the Saudis to increase oil production. Amidst criticism of the kingdom's appalling human rights record and brutal conduct in Yemen, the president defended his visit as necessary to strengthen a strategic partnership while also holding true to fundamental American values. But after years of war, prioritizing peace in Yemen must not take a backseat to the fossil fuel and arms industries. As Biden himself acknowledged in 2019, whether in Yemen or elsewhere, the U.S. should never check its principles at the door just to buy oil or sell weapons.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Eid al-Qadir. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. First of all, I would like to congratulate you, dear people, all the faithful people of our country on Eid al-Qadir and the entire world of Islam. Eid al-Qadir is considered to be a major part of Shia's historical identity. Shia men and women have for consecutive years and centuries preserved their identity through the remembrance of this event. I would also like to welcome you, dear brothers and sisters, especially those who have come from faraway cities and the esteemed families of our martyrs. Reflecting on Ghadir is one of the issues that can be of great help to our Islamic society, our people, and our country today. That is because reflecting on Ghadir will help them stay on the right path. There are two or three points that I would like to mention in regards to Ghadir. The event is one of the points that I would like to discuss. The world of Islam, which had grown relatively vast, was witness to a very important event towards the end of the Holy Prophet's life.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Commander of the Faithful was declared to be the successor of the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Ghadir is not simply an event narrated by Shi'as alone. Many Sunni luminaries and hadith scholars, muhaddithin, have also talked about this event. How the event should be interpreted is debated among Muslims. However, all Muslims are confident about the truth of this event. The fact that the Prophet assigned Imam Ali alayhi salam as his successor at the end of his life about 70 days before his demise, bears testimony to the importance of government, politics, and religious leadership, wilaya, from an Islamic viewpoint. The emphasis that our magnanimous Imam Khomeini and many other prominent religious scholars have placed on the unity between religion and politics is in fact rooted in Islamic teachings, especially the great lesson that Ghadir taught us. This shows the importance of the issue. All the people who interpret Ghadir in this way, that is, all Shi'as, and even many non-Shi'a Muslims who have a similar interpretation, many constantly pay attention to the fact that the issue of government is a critical issue, and that it is a high priority in Islam.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. For me through all my years I've been lost
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that 22% of people in the EU are struggling to make ends meet. That's almost 100 million citizens who are counting every cent. Apparently, sending weapons to Ukraine is not the answer.
The best way to deal with the cost of living crisis is to stop prolonging the war. The people of Europe favour peace, even well above punishing Russia.
EU financial markets are in turmoil. There are calls for the introduction of a windfall tax.
Energy prices and food prices are going through the roof. Capitalists make profits by speculating on markets and thereby hurting millions of households.
Members of the public have been talking to us about the current state of the EU's economy.
It's terrifying to see that our free market is like collapsing. All the money that we are going to send to Ukraine, then we will have to need this money, and where we are going to take this money from.
The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has been singled out for criticism in the European Parliament.
We don't know about the increase of cost of living in the European Union, which is just a result of the insane and unsound policies promoted by the European Union since Ursula von der Leyen took office.
There have been calls for greater solidarity between EU member states to deal with the cost of living crisis.
In order to make sure that we are not at the end dividing Europe in those who are able to help and those who have more difficulties.
On sanctions against Russia, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has said, quote, "Initially I thought that we had only shot ourselves in the foot, but now it is clear that the EU economy has shot itself in the lungs and is gasping for air." Many here agree. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Despite the UN brokered truce, the consequences of the Saudi-led war are still taking the lives of Yemeni women and children. A recent report by the International Committee of the Red Cross says a mother and six newborns die every 2 hours in Yemen of complications that occur during pregnancy and causes that can be avoided in normal circumstances.
There is a severe shortage of medical supplies and medicines, as well as a significant increase in the prices of medicines, which has led to the deterioration of health services not only in the countryside, but even in main cities.
We as gynecologists have noticed a significant increase in the number of abortions, especially premature abortions in the early stages of pregnancy. Therefore, we hope to conduct studies that will reveal to us the reason and whether or not the prohibited weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition contributed to this tragedy.
The committee says the numbers are likely to increase due to a lack of health services or poor care provided, especially amid a shortage of funding for the United Nations programs in Yemen, as well as the termination of aid related to reproductive health and mother and child health. Recently, most of the United Nations programs, including the World Food Programme, announced the suspension of their humanitarian activities in Yemen due to a lack of funding, as well as the consequences of the Russia-Ukraine war.
Yemeni health officials say 19 million Yemenis lack access to health care. They say it is a shame for the international community to abandon Yemeni women and the children who have been paying the highest price since the beginning of the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Yet another wave of COVID-19 is hitting South Korea, with cases doubling to 40,000 per day in the past week. The BA5 Omicron subvariant accounts for almost a third of the new cases, a portion that is increasing. While experts recognize vaccines may not always prevent infection, they decrease illnesses and deaths.
Even people who have been infected with Omicron before are not able to develop enough immunity to this variant unless they are vaccinated. People who have been fully vaccinated and boosted but become infected have reduced chances of severe illness of 70 to 90%.
The fatality rate of COVID-19 has dropped to near the seasonal flu. Still, experts argue the changed behaviors of mask wearing and routine vaccinations should remain in place. The recent spike in COVID-19 cases here comes as South Korea Thursday detects the first case of BA2.75, nicknamed Centaurus. Scientists worry this highly mutated Omicron variant is even more transmissible than previous strains. Some want stronger antivirus enforcement, suggesting public apathy risks another COVID-induced economic downturn.
I know that more than 90% of corona can be prevented by wearing a mask, but if people keep coming inside and taking off their masks, I feel like it will be impossible to stop the spread. So the government should take stronger measures in that area.
People are required to wear masks on transit, but the government has said it will not implement lockdowns. People over 50 will be offered fourth vaccinations next week. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Every year in the lunar month of Dhul-Hijjah, Muslims celebrate Eid al-Ghadir, a major festivity on the Islamic calendar, marking the day when Prophet Muhammad appointed Ali ibn Abi Talib, the first Shia imam, as his successor, and Muslims' next leader some 14 centuries ago. In Iran's city of Mashhad, the shrine of Imam Reza has been hosting pilgrims who have come days ahead of the auspicious occasion to celebrate the festivity.
Happy Eid al-Ghadir to all fellow Muslims. I come from Iraq to participate in the celebrations here in Mashhad. Eid al-Ghadir marks the day when Prophet Muhammad announced to Muslims that Imam Ali is the next Muslim leader. He raised Imam Ali's hand and said, "Whoever I am their leader, Ali is their leader too." The Prophet was on his way back from his last Hajj pilgrimage, where he was accompanied by many people.
Eid al-Ghadir comes 8 days after another major festivity on the Islamic lunar calendar, dubbed Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice. The occasion marks the climax of the annual Hajj pilgrimage.
To us Iranians, it's a blessing to visit the shrine of Imam Reza on the Feast of Sacrifice and other festivities. Those of us who can't make it to Mecca on the Hajj usually come to Imam Reza's shrine to pray and enjoy the spiritual atmosphere.
Imam Reza is the 8th Shia Imam, whose bloodline goes back to the Prophet of Islam. He holds a special position among Iranians since he spent his last years of life in Iran, away from his birthplace in modern-day Saudi Arabia. Every year, his holy shrine hosts millions of pilgrims from around the Muslim world, especially during religious occasions. Iranians never miss a chance to come and visit the shrine of Imam Reza. And now that Eid al-Ghadir is just around the corner, Shia Muslims find it an opportunity to once again attend this holy site and share the festive mood with each other. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
Notorious Ukrainian website Mirot Veretz, meaning peacemaker. It publishes the names and addresses of those it deems to be enemies of Ukraine. The opening page shows pictures of dead Russian soldiers. On the list are domestic and foreign journalists, politicians and citizens that in some way they view to have aided or worked with pro-Russian forces in the country. Now, shamefully, they are adding children to the list. Faina Sevenkova, she is 13 years old and has been writing about her experiences here in Donbass. After her name appeared on the list, she started to receive threats of physical violence online.
Are you worried about being on the website? Are you concerned that something might happen to you?
Yes, of course. A person I knew got to know my address and came to greet me for my birthday. These are good intentions, but something worse can happen. Websites like this shouldn't exist. They're illegal. They put many people in danger, children as well. I have a friend who was put on there because she wrote a poem about war.
Numerous journalists and public figures have been murdered after being put on the list, like Oles Bazina, who was shot near his home in Kiev, and Andrei Andrea Vercelli, an Italian journalist, after he was killed on the front line. The website posted "liquidated" over his photo. The Committee to Protect Journalists has previously written to the Ukrainian government, asking them to condemn the unfounded and damaging allegations published on Mirotorvets, and to clarify publicly that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry is dedicated to protecting journalists. The United Nations and Human Rights Watch have also condemned the site. Dianis Bitkonen, a Finnish journalist in Donbass, he's also